It's time for an update. So Dr. Leah and I love deep diving into these various topics surrounding the journey into and throughout motherhood, not only because we have chosen women's reproductive and perinatal health as our medical specialties, but because we ourselves are mothers as well. And we're going through all of this right alongside you. This week, we chat with Dr. Leah about her early pregnancy symptoms and discuss the difficulties of pregnancy nausea, or morning sickness, which we know is actually all-day sickness. She also outlines several helpful strategies to try if you are also struggling. She discusses how she's feeling overall, as well as her plans for this birth. And then I detail what it has been like coming out of the intensity of these early postpartum months and how life is now flowing with our fourth baby. Thank you for being with us on these journeys. We really appreciate it. Now let's go.
Welcome to Healthy as a Mother, the podcast for becoming and being a mother, with your co-hosts, Dr. Leah Gordon and Dr. Morgan McDermott, two naturopathic doctors who get it.
Each week, we teach you how to be the healthiest mother you can be, from fertility and preconception to pregnancy and birth prep, through postpartum and throughout motherhood, empowering you with the natural health guidance and education you're not getting elsewhere, so you can confidently navigate the broken system at large.
The real, the raw, the untalked about. And remember, this information is not intended to diagnose, treat, or manage any disease. Always consult with your doctor before making any changes.
All right. So we're going to talk today about kind of where we're at in our own journeys, because we feel like it is helpful to you guys to hear, you know, we're just right along there with you. And it's not always easy. And things do get better. So we're trying to sort of live as real life examples of how this can go and happen. And also to show that even though we have all of this knowledge, it doesn't mean that we're exempt from experiencing things, because there's only so much that you can do. And then it's just life. And so Dr. Leah is going to give us an update on her pregnancy so far. And then I'm going to kind of talk about where I'm at with postpartum. So go ahead and start us off, because unfortunately you've been not feeling very well.
No, I don't feel good. It's hard, because when you go through infertility, and I've heard this from a lot of women, we feel like as soon as we get pregnant, we should be so happy and so grateful and so excited. And that like all this work that you've been working toward and praying for and like trying for so long, it's finally happening. And when you have experiences like me, where you feel really sick and maybe not connected to the baby and depressed and like all of these things that can come with the first trimester for some women, it can kind of rock your world and feel really hard, and you can feel kind of guilty. And that's kind of where I'm at. And I
– how many weeks are you?
I'm 8.5 weeks. Well, eight, almost nine. Oh my God. Literally just saying that makes me want to vomit. Because I've heard from so many people that nausea is like peaks at 9 weeks. And I don't know. It's just like the nausea stuff is just so interesting, because there's definitely a mental component. Like if I think about food, like if you like talk to me about some food and it just doesn't resonate with me, like I'll want to just vomit, just the thought of it, you know.
Does it make you like dry heave? Are you getting like gaggy in your back of your throat, or is it like in your stomach it hurts?
It feels like it's coming up from my stomach. I mean, I'll definitely dry heave, but if I dry heave, I'm gonna throw up.
Yeah.
Like, I've never dry heaved and then it didn't end up with vomiting.
Oh my God. I one time coughed. I've told you this before, but I started coughing. I was eating a cookie at a pool.
Yeah.
And I made these really delicious cookies that you barely bake, and they're so delicious. And I kind of like was eating one and talking, and I just, I don't know, like maybe swallowed something wrong. And so I started coughing a little bit, and I just kept coughing. And I was trying to like clear my throat, and then I was gagging, and then I knew I was going to puke. And I ran to the bathroom at the pool, and I didn't make it. And I puked all over the pool floor. That's like, you know, there's a half an inch of water. It was the grossest thing. I couldn't make it to the toilet. It was I try to pick it up with my hands, and then with
my God, towel. Like I can't even.
Oh, sorry.
No, it's okay. We can talk about it. It's fine. It's just like I can just imagine it. Yeah, that's so gross.
And so you have puked now. Tell us about it. Oh, unless you can.
Oh yeah. No, I can. I think I'm okay. Yeah. So I'm definitely worse from smells. Like smells seem to be the biggest trigger for me. And it's just so funny, because growing up, before you're pregnant, you see all of these movies and shows of these classic, you know, quote unquote people who find out they're pregnant because they, you know, all of a sudden smell something and then like throw up. And I feel like it rarely happens early in a pregnancy before someone has realized that they've missed their period or whatever. But that part, that like classic, like, oh, I'm like smelling something weird and I'm just going to go vomit, is very real for me. And like the other day, it was so bad. I was trying to choke down lentils for breakfast because I'm way worse in the morning when I wake up. And I was like, I need to just get protein in me. So I'm eating just like plain black lentils, and they smelled like fish to me, even though there was nothing fishy about them. I was just like, oh, gross. And I was like trying to like barely eat them. And then I knew I needed more food. So I went to the refrigerator, and just opening the refrigerator made me start dry heaving. And then
– Wait, because of the smells or because of looking at it?
Both probably.
Oh.
You know, it's not like we have a rotten refrigerator. You know, it's just like foods in general, like just seeing that there's a food in there or smelling anything. Just being in the kitchen. Oh my God, like even just talking about this makes me want to throw up. But
so
I just started
– you're averse to every food. It's not like
– Yes, every food.
Oh my
God. And that's what makes it so hard, is the food aversions. And I don't think all women have that and to this extreme, because – you know, everyone's like, oh, just eat a little bit all day, you know? And it's like, oh my God. I like eating to me is torture.
Oh.
Torture, which I love food. I'm such a foodie. And it's so weird to, if someone's like, please eat this like really yummy thing. And I'm just like, oh my God. Like, no, I can't even like the thought of it. Nothing sounds good. And not only that it doesn't sound good, it makes me feel like I'm going to throw up if it comes around me, if I smell it, if I eat it.
Are you having any cravings? Like none at all. Like nothing ever sounds good.
I would say on most days, there's one thing that I could imagine eating. And it's typically something that is far away from me in like a restaurant setting that is not something that we make at home. And I typically am better for dinner. Morning is the worst. Like I actually dread every morning, and lunch is still pretty bad lunchtime. But by dinner, I'm like okay, where I feel like I could eat something. And that's the only time of the day that I really can eat meat, because I'm trying to get protein. You know, there's a lot of different theories about what causes morning sickness. And I think there's different theories because there's probably different factors involved. It's probably multifactorial. And I feel like I have all the factors.
I probably do. Yeah, you probably have like 10% this, 10% that, da, da, da. I feel like that is the way that most life is. And it's, but specifically with first trimester nausea, it is just like, it is such a crapshoot because it's a cycle too. Because let's just pretend that you wake up in the morning and you're low blood sugar. And then you don't want to eat, but your low blood sugar is making you even more nauseous. And so then it just is a cycle, because then you don't want to eat. Or like for women who do vomit a lot, it's like that, you know, getting dehydrated is going to make you more nauseous. And so then you're puking, and then you're more nauseous, and then you're even more nauseous because you're more dehydrated because you're puking up all of your water. And it's just like, it's so hard to get on top of it. And I mean, besides what, like staring in front of the TV and like just chewing and swallowing and like trying to distract yourself and dissociate. Like, how are you supposed to do it?
I mean, and for me, it's like, that doesn't even work. Like I would throw up through it. But yeah, for me, so that's the thing, is I've always historically had a harder time keeping my blood sugar balanced. It's why plant-based eating is not helpful for me, because I'm just a person who really has to have like a lot of protein and fat to keep my blood sugar balanced. I can't really live off just carbs and things like that. And that is challenging because blood sugar is definitely a part of the nausea with pregnancy. Progesterone is as well. And I'm taking extra progesterone because of how I had to conceive with IVF, and my doctor wanted me on that. And there's also a theory of higher HCG. Who knows? I haven't checked my HCG in a while. It's not like I'm having twins, so that might not be the factor. There's another thought that there's a hormone secreted by the embryo and the placenta that women are intolerant to. And knowing my luck, I probably am, because I feel like I'm intolerant to everything. And my, you know, it's just weird. But the tricky thing for me is, even when I eat, my nausea doesn't get better.
Oh.
So like last night, I was a little bit better. We had some dinner. My parents were here. But then after eating, I actually got worse. It's like the food's like putrefying in my gut. And it just is terrible. So it's really tricky. And, you know, I had mentioned, like, with the sickness comes sadness and, like, a depression kind of. I mean, depression isn't anything I've ever really struggled with. I know some women have always really struggled with mood imbalances and things like that. When I was on birth control, I was depressed. So I guess it, in times of changing my hormones, maybe that happens for me.
Yeah. I mean, and that's totally reasonable because it's a big, and that's, you know, same thing with postpartum. I think for me, it's like, there's a huge component of just this uncontrollable. There's really nothing you can do about it because you don't want to mess with the hormones of early pregnancy. You don't want to mess with the hormones. Like somebody asked me the other day about adaptogens in early pregnancy, because I'm assuming, I don't know this, but let's just pretend that she's experiencing some mood swings and, you know, low energy and different things. And it's like, you know, really, there, we don't want to mess with that process, but it's really hard to just like strap up and like ride along with it and be like, well, okay. And with postpartum, like that drop is so big. For some reason, the increase in the beginning doesn't really affect me that much. And then same thing with you. For some reason, the drop in postpartum hormones doesn't really affect you that much.
Yeah.
But it does me.
Yeah.
It's like everybody's going to have their thing. Like everybody's going to have their, and then there's going to be women who don't experience any nausea, which is interesting. And I wanted to ask you, because your first baby was a girl. Now you're pregnant with a boy. Does it feel any different or is it similar? I mean, it's only been a couple weeks, but let's, you know.
No, it's hard to say. So at first, when I was first pregnant, this is the roller coaster of just getting pregnant. At first, I didn't have any symptoms and I was really worried and I was really stressing out because I actually had a lot of energy and I wasn't sick feeling. And with my daughter, I was sick right away. I remember almost immediately after transferring my embryo, I was so sick. I had reflux almost immediately. I couldn't eat all sorts of foods. I was having a crazy reaction to everything. And it was beyond like even the normal pregnancy nausea. I think it was, I was having like severe reactions to foods. And I think that was contributing to a lot of my illness. And I think I think I had the normal pregnancy nausea that was just on top of this other like intense nausea that I had, because I had that and I was puking way more in the second trimester, which is not typical in pregnancy usually. And I finally had an intuition around like 24 weeks to stop eating eggs. And my nausea went away completely after that. And then I rechallenged eggs and it came back. So I was like, okay. I was eating so many eggs during my pregnancy, trying to get choline, trying to, you know, get all of the nutrients that eggs have. And there were times where I couldn't eat anything, quote unquote, but I was like getting my eggs in. So I would have them in all sorts of forms.
But then really eggs are actually making me sick.
And that's what's so tricky. And so it's hard to say if it's better or worse, but there have been times it's just so hard with all of the aspects of motherhood and pregnancy is that we have this crazy amnesia, you know, that we forget stuff. And, but I was so sick with Avia that I was really nervous to get pregnant again, even though I wanted to be pregnant again. And even though we went through infertility and we had to do all these crazy things to become pregnant again, I was very nervous because I was so afraid to feel like that again. And I was really hoping it would be better because we are pregnant with a boy. But I don't feel like it's that much better. What I'm praying and hoping for is that I'm not having some severe food intolerance. I've already kind of stopped eating eggs just in case. And that it'll just be the normal, typical pregnancy nausea that goes away after the first trimester. Because, I mean, there are times I've cried so much since I've been pregnant. And that's what's so hard is like, you know, that's hard to say to people, especially – you know, I still have a lot of my infertility patients and they know that I'm sick and struggling and they'll be like, how are you? And I've been where they are in their shoes. And it's like, I know that you would give anything to be me, to be sitting here sick, but pregnant.
Yeah.
And I get that. And it's like, and then once you are, I was thinking the other day, it's like you, I would so much rather be sick and pregnant than going through infertility. But then I would so much rather be giving birth and in pain than be sick and nauseous. But then I would so much rather have like cracked bleeding nipples and, you know, having breastfeeding issues than being in pain at birth. You know, it's like every like aspect feels like better than the last. When it's like when you're in it, though, it actually feels so hard. But then no, looking
that's
back,
really interesting. Yeah.
I'd so much rather have that. And then, you know, it's like, I'd so much rather have sleep deprivation than like, you know, cracked bleeding nipples. You know, it's like all the things that we experience as women that we just deal with. And you just keep thinking like this next thing is what I would rather have. But it's like, I get it. Like I would so much rather be pregnant, obviously, and sick than struggling with infertility. But in the moment, it doesn't take the fact that we struggled to get pregnant and that I want this baby so bad doesn't take away how hard it is.
100%. And I think that that's really good for people to hear, because maybe other people aren't saying that, or they're not hearing it from others. And then they're experiencing it like, okay, I wanted this so bad. And like, what is happening? I remember with my first pregnancy, I didn't actually have any nausea at all. None at all.
That is so cool.
I know. It was so cool. I was a dead zombie tired, but not a single moment of nausea. But I remembered having a lot of like those existential thoughts about like, what did I do to like my relationship with he was only my fiance at that time. We'd only been together for a year. And I was like, we didn't do the traveling and the things that people are supposed to do before they have a family. And, you know, but it makes you're like, I want this, but also what's happening and what's going on. And I don't know. I just feel like people don't really speak about that. It's like, you see those two lines and you should just be infinitely happy and be so grateful for what you have. And it's like, yeah, in one part of your brain, you are grateful. You're so grateful that this transfer worked and that you're going to be able to have this baby. And at the same time, it's like, now you just have to sit in this place of feeling so uncomfortable 24 hours a day for months. It's not like, that's the thing about birth is that birth is quick. I mean, it's so intense.
I know.
But it's like,
I would so much rather be stabbed with like 1,000 knives for like a day. Because I know it's going to end, right?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
That's the worst part, is that it doesn't stop. It's the unrelenting, never stops, never goes away. And that's what like just beats you down. And it is, it's hard, especially like when you do feel like, when you're like me, like I feel really good most of the time. I feel good in my body. I have energy. I'm really happy. And it is a weird sensation to be like, okay, I did this thing that I want, but yeah, I have to sit through this and suffer day in and day out. And I chose this, you know, and it's just, it is different when you choose it, I guess. I mean, the hardest would maybe be for someone who got pregnant and didn't want to and wasn't actually like wanting a baby really bad and also experiencing this. That would be really, really challenging. Because I shared, I've had a hard time connecting with the baby. I mean, I think I told you this. I'm like, I feel like, is it Bella in Twilight? Is that her name?
Yeah.
When she was pregnant with like the vampire and it was like eating her from the inside or like destroying her, whatever. I'm like, I feel like that a little bit, but I also don't even feel like I have a baby in my body. I just feel so sick. Like there's no, I'm a glowing pregnant person. I feel so happy and elated. And it's just so hard, you know?
I'm really hoping that you do have that classic, like this all drops off as the second trimester enters and then you feel so much better. There are people that never feel better. They are sick the entire pregnancy. And then there's hyperemesis, gravidarum, which is like a whole different thing. But I would say for the vast majority of women though, it's like when you're going to feel your most intense symptoms will be in the first trimester. And it can be really hard. I mean, it's 3 months. It can be, you know, it can be longer than that, but it is at least 3 months where pretty much 24 hours a day, you feel absolutely, you know, very different in your body to some level, whether it's fatigue or emotionality or the nausea or all of them, or, you know, there's so many different things that can happen. Pains and constipation and acne and weird skin stuff that happens. There's a lot of things that can happen. And it's just really weird to be experiencing that and just kind of sit in it. And like you said, it's such a long period of time and you don't really know when it's going to end. And it is, as you're speaking about it, it is akin to postpartum because it's a long period of time. It's months. It's not just a quick moment like the birth is. Birth is big and important, of course, for sure. But it's like maximum, you know, 2 or 3 days or something like that usually. But yeah, you're just sort of sitting in this like uncomfortable part in your body where you're like, when is this going to feel better? I don't know. And I just have to keep chugging through it every day. And it is hard. And it's something that we just don't talk about enough. So
now
I wanted to ask you, because I'm sure people are going to wonder, like, what treatments have you tried so far?
Mm-hmm.
And because we do have a lot of tools in our toolbox, doesn't mean that they're going to work, but there is a lot of things to at least attempt, because many people do experience alleviation of symptoms with, you know, various things, whether it's ginger, B6 or homeopathy, or, you know, yes, keeping your blood sugar regulated. It's really hard to do that when you're completely averse to every single food. So I feel like you do have a more severe first trimester pregnancy nausea. Maybe it is exacerbated by the progesterone, like you're saying, since you are taking a high dose, and it's like, well, we need to do that right now so that we make sure that everything goes well with keeping the baby. And it, but it's like, oh man, that is just such a tricky thing. Cause it's like, how much better would you feel if you weren't having to take that, you know, who knows, but it's not worth getting off of it yet. So right.
There's so much that women sacrifice to become mothers. And it is crazy, like you mentioned, that we don't talk about it, because in our culture, you know, we're just told not to tell anyone that we're pregnant until we're in the second trimester. Yes. And I just think so many women feel so alone. And I've had so many women reach out since I've been sharing how I feel on Instagram. I mean, the people who don't feel sick obviously aren't reaching out to be like, I felt great. But it feels like an overwhelming amount of people have similar experiences. And I, you know, it, there's so many people even in my circle that you find out they're pregnant. They're already in their second trimester. It's not like they were venting to you, or you weren't knowing what they were going through that first trimester. And so if you are going through it and you don't have a community of people that, you know, you can talk to, or you feel so alone, you know, this, everyone reaching out to me has actually helped me feel not so crazy, because there's a part of me that I'm like, am I just a big baby? Like, what is going on? Or, you know, so as far as the treatments with food, I shared this on my Instagram, but it was a story. So unless you like follow me every single moment of the day, you probably could have missed it. And I talked about how I went to Chick-fil-A for after I dropped my daughter off at school, because it was the only thing I could imagine eating, and how it's harder, I would say, maybe for people who are super health conscious before pregnancy. If you are really sick and the only things you are wanting to eat or crave are things you don't traditionally eat. So I typically avoid gluten and dairy because they really affect me in a negative way. And when I'm pregnant, the only things I want to eat are gluten and dairy and fried food, fast food, French fries. You know, I wanted to go to Texas Roadhouse the other day and eat their rolls. I mean, things that I haven't done since like high school. And it's a lot of comfort food. It's a lot of nostalgia food. And I've, a lot of women have shared this with me, you know, whatever they ate as a kid, whatever made them feel good. And I don't know if it's because we feel so sick that we want those things, or if there's actually a product of pregnancy that's craving fat, or, you know, it's maybe not the healthiest fat, but it's not like I want to go eat an avocado. I mean, I was at the beginning of my pregnancy eating like avocado toast, and I was like, oh, look at me, like I can do it. I can like eat all this good fat. And I mean, the thought of, I opened an avocado the other day thinking I could eat it with whatever meal we were having, and I was just like, oh my God, like, no. I want like a fried chicken finger from Chick-fil-A. That's what I want.
I don't that know story I think is going to go down as like one of my favorite things I've ever seen. Because it is so, I mean, I feel like the people have a pretty good idea of who you are from, you know, this podcast and from following you, but for knowing you for so long, that was like, I was like, I can't believe my eyes that you're in the Chick-fil-A drive-thru right now.
Because I know, I hadn't even like ordered at a drive-thru, like out in my car, like receiving like a bag of food through the window. So, I mean, I don't even know if I've done that in my adult life.
No, because you're very much more strict about eating than I am. And I think it's also mostly because it really does affect the way that you feel.
Yeah, because so I feel bad. It's not because I'm like afraid, or, you know, it's just I don't feel good. Yeah. I make all these decisions because I've learned what makes me feel good, and it's why I don't have to drink coffee and I have like 10 out of 10 energy, and, you know, all of these things that I've just like never really struggled with. And so yeah, it was really true. It was so funny. I actually had a friend text me. It's like people you don't even realize watch your stories. He literally texted me and was like, I'm gonna buy stock in Chick-fil-A now.
That's so awesome.
I was like, oh my God, that's so funny. But
I've been so many people that watch that and they were just like, oh, thank God. Because, you know, somebody being like a health, like, what am I trying to say? Like a role model, like you are, to see you do something like that, which is not going to affect your health greatly in a negative way to go through a Chick-fil-A drive-thru here and there. It's really not. It's okay, you guys. Like, it's really, really not. It just was, it was like so refreshing, I think. And for so many people, they were probably going to see that and be like, wow, oh my gosh. Okay, here's this naturopathic doctor who's like so into health, who's still also having a hard time. And like, that is huge. I feel like that is really, really helpful people for people to see and to hear and be like, yeah, you know what? You're going to do things. Cause I do that a lot more frequently. So it's not as shocking for you. I think it was like, wow. Okay. You like, this is what you needed to do to get by and to survive. And like you said, at the end of the day, your baby needs nutrients, your baby needs protein, your baby needs fat. So if that is all you're literally actually going to be able to eat, and I know how hard you try to eat healthy food. So it's not like you were being lazy and just like giving up or, you know, whatever. You were really like, this is actually truly the only thing that I can eat.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I just love it. I'm always going to think about that.
I know. It's so funny. I think it was like so funny for so many people, but you know, that's the truth and the reality. And it's, I feel like a pretty balanced, I don't think I would have ever diagnosed myself as orthorexia. Like orthorexia is like an eating disorder. That's an obsession with healthy food. And there are people in our profession and there are people in the health community that I would say suffer from that. I've always, you know, even in my food program on Womanhood Wellness, I teach the joyful eating formula, which is about understanding if foods make you feel good or bad, and then you choosing what brings you the most joy in that moment, right? If you know that dairy gives you gas, but you're at a birthday party and the cake, eating the cake with the dairy is going to bring you way more joy than the gas, you know, and eat the cake and do so with like so much joy in your heart. But if the gas is going to bring you less joy than the taste of the dairy, you know, like you make these decisions day by day, but you first need to know if foods make you feel good or not, because there is a reality. Like my sister was experiencing nausea like I'm experiencing for 2 years and we couldn't figure it out. We thought she had cancer. We thought all these things. And it turns out it was an egg intolerance, like mine was with my pregnancy. And since she stopped eating them, her nausea's completely gone away. And, you know, she was really depressed during that time. And now that I feel like this, I've told her multiple times, I'm like, I cannot imagine that you were experiencing this every day. No wonder you were suffering so much, because this is terrible. And so there is a reality for some people that certain foods don't make them feel good. And we don't want to demonize foods either, especially if they're just being demonized just because someone said so, not because it actually doesn't resonate with your body.
Right.
And the hardest thing for me is like, I know that gluten and dairy don't necessarily resonate with my body that much, but for some reason during pregnancy and postpartum, that seems to be like some of the only things I can eat. And so I'm just practicing acceptance of that. Yeah. And that's one of my recommendations for people is on one side, you know, start to pay attention. If you are like I was in my first pregnancy, I wish I had had the forethought about food intolerances to think like maybe there is a certain food I'm eating all of the time that's making me feel bad, and think about that, experiment, pulling certain things out of your diet, not eating the same thing every day and paying attention. Do you feel better on this day that you're not eating XYZ, but also not being afraid to eat whatever your body's craving and to, you know, do whatever you need to do to get by. For me, every day at dinner time, I kind of have this idea of like what I could eat. And we've gone out a lot more. You know, Mike's driven me all over the valley to wherever place I want to go for dinner. And that's just kind of how we've survived. And then the next day, I don't ever want to eat the leftovers. I don't ever want to eat that food ever again. That's just how it is. As far as other treatments, I have been taking B6. I've been taking 50 milligrams morning and sometimes at night, like twice a day, which is 100 milligrams, which is a lot. But the studies show around 50 milligrams is helpful. And we know that there's a safety profile that you can go higher than that. But I would say 50 is probably the goal for B6. And it's hard to say if it helps or not. You know, some days I'm a little bit better than others. I'm like, was it that? I have ginger pills. I've tried to take them, but the swallowing of them makes me want to throw them back up.
So oh, no.
I don't know, but I need to try it again. It's like, you know, the hard part too is when you're sick and you're eating a certain thing or you're around a certain thing, you associate that thing with your nausea, and then it makes it so much harder to like eat that. But homeopathy has also been something that's helped some. You know, we're trained in classical homeopathy. I've done a lot of work with homeopathy and I've done a lot of extra training in homeopathy, and I've found that a lot of these amazing homeopathy blogs online are such a fun and easy, quick resource that you can just go to and say, you know, homeopathic remedy for reflux, or homeopathic remedy for nausea, homeopathic remedy for gas and indigestion. And you can read about the different remedies and see which one sounds like you. Instead of, you know, for the way I used to practice homeopathy is taking a whole case and it would take hours and hours and repping it. And that is better and superior. And I'm sure you will find the exact right remedy. But for someone who's listening, who doesn't have access to that, I think it's a great option and a great resource. So there's so many resources, like Dr. Homeo is a good one, but there's a bunch of others where you can just read about the remedy. It's not an extensive profile of the remedy and it's not perfect, but it doesn't hurt. You can take homeopathy in pregnancy. There's no harm. And so I have a whole basket of remedies that I've kind of alternated between depending on how I feel. And I feel different every day, so I might need a different remedy every day because I'm not having the exact same experience. And that has been a really helpful tool that I think other people could really benefit from that unfortunately, you know, mainstream medicine just doesn't know anything about. And it's such a shame because it is so helpful for the seasons of pregnancy, birth, and postpartum.
100%. And I actually like really want to echo what you said about those blogs. I love pointing people to those blogs because I think homeopathy is a really interesting and also very daunting modality to learn about. And it, for the community of people, especially mothers, it's such a good one because it is so safe for children and it's also very effective for children. And you don't really ever, I feel like what's such a common experience is that women maybe are kind of like, I don't know if homeopathy works. And then you use it on your kid who has no idea what you're giving them. It's and when it works, when you see their temperature on their, the thermometer go down, or you see the rash disappear or whatever, you're really like, okay. Same thing with animals. You can give it to animals as well. And it's like, it's not a placebo effect because they don't know what you're doing and for which symptom. I mean, I guess maybe unless you're telling them, but anyways, those blogs I think can really help people develop the first couple layers of exposure, the first couple layers of the onion about the remedies.
Yeah.
And then they'll start to see repeated patterns like, oh, okay, well you can use pulsatilla for a runny nose and it's going to look like this. You can also use pulsatilla for, you know, mood and temper tantrums and like emotional things. It's going to look like this. Then you can use pulsatilla for an ear infection. It's going to look like this. And you'll start to, in your mind, kind of piece together a profile of what pulsatilla is and how it's going to treat things. And that like there, the certain aspects of life that make the symptoms better are the same. Like pulsatilla is better outside or in fresh open air. Pulsatilla is better with a lot of affection and being consoled while they're upset. Whereas there's other remedies that don't want to be consoled when they're upset. So then that can kind of help you tease that one out and be like, well, does my kid want to be picked up? Do I want to be held or whatever? You know, all these different things. But I love those blogs, and Dr. Homeo specifically, I think is great. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I've never seen a mistake written on there. And I read through them often. And I also often send them to friends, clients, patients, whatever, as a way for them to just sort of, begin to learn these kinds of like, okay, what's a good remedy for allergies right now? It's seasonal allergies time. My mom and I were just talking about this. And so she was like talking with me about her symptoms. And then we were kind of going through the profiles together. And it's like, that is such a great way to go about it. Yes, like you said, the very most superior way to get a homeopathic remedy is from somebody who's going to repertorize your case.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean that it's useless for you to go on a blog and read those. So
right. Yeah, especially when you're desperate. And you know, I have such a passion for homeopathy. Again, people who don't think it works is because they haven't had as much experience with it and they haven't seen it do miraculous things like those who have. And just, it is amazing when it works. And not every remedy, it's the frustrating part about homeopathy for the conventional minded person is that it's not like our pharmaceuticals where, oh, you have depression. Okay. Everyone goes on this SSRI, even though even in their world, they know that like not every antidepressant medication works for every patient. They try one and then they try the next one. But as a general rule, pharmaceuticals are manipulating something. It's like a big hammer, a big wrench that's turning something or doing something really intense in the body. And it kind of does a similar thing in every person. Homeopathy is specific to that person's unique expression of whatever you're looking at. So you know, 20 women could come to me and all have morning sickness. But if I asked each of them what their symptoms are, they're all going to be very different. You know, like one woman is going to be craving sour foods and like is super over her family and like is just wants to be out in the sunshine. Like, leave me alone. I don't care about you. I'm, you know, I can't stand the smell of food. It's very classic. Yeah. Seafood. Yeah. Which I was at the beginning of my morning sickness. I was so like, I don't care. Like, I don't care about anything. I don't care about my husband. I don't care about my daughter. I just want to eat a lemonade. And I just, you know, I couldn't stand the smell of foods. And I'm like, this is so classic sepia. But then, you know, I remember like a couple days in, I was having such intense food aversion. And bless his heart, my husband is so sweet. You know, he was with me all through naturopathic medical school. And I must talk a lot more than I think I do and share because he knows so much. And I remember we had this joke in our class about whose partner was going to be like the most honorable, like naturopathic doctor of like who's absorbed as much, like the most knowledge. And I feel like Mike could have been up there as like a top person. And he was so sweet. Like, I was so sick and I was just bawling my eyes out. And I came upstairs, like laying on our guest room mattress, like dying. And, you know, he's like at his computer and I just like, I don't care what he was doing. And all of a sudden he turns around and he's like, I think it was antimonium crudum. And I have all the remedies because I had in my practice all the remedies. So I have every like homeopathic remedy, which I am very grateful for. Like, other people will, you'll have to go to the home or like Whole Foods or order it on Amazon, but I have them all at my disposal. I'm very, very blessed in that. And he got this remedy.
Like, you didn't have to buy them. You had to buy them.
Yeah, I totally had to buy them. And I'm like, whatever. I have tinctures and teas and all sorts of stuff from my practice. But he like got this remedy that he looked up because I was only looking up nausea remedies and I was trying all these different remedies. They weren't helping. And he's like, I looked up food aversion and anorexia. So he was looking at anorexia remedies. And this remedy would have never come up in my searches of nausea. But really what I was experiencing was I didn't want to eat anything.
Yeah.
And like, that's what was so hard. And so he read the profile of this remedy to me. And it's a classic remedy for people with anorexia, people who have like severe food aversion. They don't want to eat anything and they do become nauseous because they're not eating. And I took that remedy and I can't even tell you. I mean, I was like a 10 out of 10, bawling my eyes out. And I had tried other remedies. It's not like I'm an easy placebo person where like no matter what I take, it's going to help me. I mean, it was shocking how much it brought relief to me. And my nausea pain turned into hunger. Where I hadn't been registering, you know, the nausea is when you're hungry sometimes, but you don't feel hungry. You feel nauseous and sick. And I remember like it shifting to that feeling hunger. And I was like, this is amazing. Like, it's so magical. So it's just like, yeah, that's kind of what I've done as far as treatment. And I know I want to get to you and your update. So moral of the story is it's been really hard and I hope it gets better. And anyone listening, if you're trying to get pregnant and you haven't yet, like, you know, prepare yourself that this is something. I was blown away in my first pregnancy. I was not expecting to be so sick. My mom wasn't sick. And so we just think like we're going to have a pregnancy like our mothers. And my pregnancies have not been like my mom's. So know that you're not alone.
Yeah. Thanks for sharing. No, and that's that bit about the homeopathic when it just, it shifts something. The thing about homeopathy that I think also I want to say is that it's not going to mask your symptoms. Mm-hmm. It helps them sort of process through you in a more complete and thorough and quicker way. Or it can just shift. It's literally like a bioenergetic field shifter. Mm-hmm. So we know that the bioenergetic field is real. It is a very real measurable thing. Homeopathy is not very measurable. And that's why the conventional community absolutely wigs out and hates it. it's so funny though. They're trying to make it illegal.
Oh my God.
I'm like, okay, tell me you're threatened without telling me you're threatened. Like,
yeah, oh, 100%.
Why make it illegal if you don't think it works? Like, why do you even care
this
then?
$10 remedy is like really hurting people. It's like, oh God, there's like no rationale for that other than they are threatened 100%.
They're threatened. It's such a joke. And I really encourage anybody listening to, if you've never really started to go down the homeopathy path, just give it a shot a couple times and see, you know, again, you will have no improvement whatsoever if it's not the right remedy. That's why sometimes those blend remedies are helpful, because there's like 8 or 10 remedies in one particular like little tablet or whatever it is. And so you might get some relief there. Yeah. The problem is that you don't know which one is helping you. You could go out and then buy each of those individual ones and figure it out. Usually people aren't going to do that. You don't really need to. It's totally fine to take those combo ones. But it can just sort of be your like gateway drug into getting into the world of homeopathy because it helps.
Let's take a quick break to hear a word from our sponsors.
It's no secret that most women are not getting adequate protein in their daily diets. We need protein for all major body functions, including hormone production, to maintain a healthy, regular menstrual cycle. The requirements for protein only increase when we become pregnant, are nursing, and recovering postpartum. There are many options on the market for protein and collagen powders out there, and we understand that it can be tricky to vet all of the various brands and types. So let me make it easy for you. The Needed collagen powder is my top recommendation for an easy-to-mix, quick-dissolving, and completely tasteless supplemental protein for many reasons. It's grass-fed, sustainably sourced, and has 14 grams of protein per scoop. It passes rigorous third-party testing for heavy metals contamination, and the company keeps this information transparent for the public. I mix mine into coffee, oatmeal, or smoothies almost every day. Head to thisisneeded.com and use code HEALTHYMOTHER to save 20%. Again, head to thisisneeded.com and use code HEALTHYMOTHER to save.
Okay, back to the show.
Real quick though, before we move on to me, I wanted to ask you about birth plans and like mindset, and what's your situation plan for that?
Yeah. So I decided on a midwife. I'm very excited. I'm going to be doing a VBAC at home. So a vaginal birth after cesarean. That's my goal and my plan. I learned recently from my midwife that there's a law in Idaho that if you have 2 C-sections, you can never have a vaginal birth. So
what?
Yeah. So what? The pressure is on, and I'm trying not to feel the pressure because I know the pressure will get worse, but I'm trying really hard to have a vaginal birth, because if I end up having another C-section, if I have another child, if I am in the state of Idaho, I will have to have another C-section, and that would be terrible. So yeah, unfortunate. So I'm hoping for a home birth VBAC, and I am nervous. I have a lot of emotional processing to do this pregnancy, because my last birth started out as a home birth, ended up as a C-section with a failure to progress pattern. And so it's really hard for me to imagine that my body can just do it, you know? I mean, I know a lot of women have totally successful births after a failure to progress situation and after C-sections and all these different things. But it's one thing to hear about something and another thing to embody it. Mm-hmm. So I know I have my work cut out for me there, because it's sort of like, I don't know, it's just, if you've never experienced it and you've experienced the other thing, there's just going to have to be a lot of visualization, right, of me having the other experience, mm-hmm. because I just keep going back to the experience where I'm laboring, I'm doing all the things, and like literally it's just not working. So I'm like, why isn't this working? Why isn't my body dilating? What's going on? And that is really trippy. So I'm excited for that. I'm going to be doing a lot of mental, emotional release work and processing and visualization and stuff, but I can't even really think about that until I'm not feeling sick. So
totally. Yeah.
It's on my mind in the future.
Yeah, it's going to take a lot of mental energy to go there, and you just don't have that right now, and that's okay, because you'll have lots of other time, and we will prep you with all of the things, and also, you know, share with resources on the podcast in future episodes about kind of like how it's going when we do another update progress episode, and we also have plans for a VBAC episode, which will be cool, mm-hmm. that is going to kind of deep dive into it as well, so we will be sharing all of that resources with you guys. And I'm really excited. I'm so happy that you chose a midwife. And
I know, me too.
You know, what's crazy is that in this valley right now, there is so many people that have moved here, and there's just not as many home birth midwives as is meeting the demand. And so I just encourage you, if anybody's local to the Boise, Idaho area, basically the second you become pregnant, you need to reach out to somebody and begin that process. I do always suggest that anyways, like soon after. But in a particular place like this right now, it is like even more pertinent than normal.
Yeah. So tell us about you and your update.
Okay. So I'm 5 months postpartum yesterday. which is crazy to think about because 5 months is basically 6 months in my mind. And I can't believe that half a year has gone by since she's been born.
Yeah, you know, that is crazy.
Yeah, time is so weird, I feel like, when you become a mom. And like you said with the amnesia as well, you think you're going to remember everything. You think there's no way I'm going to forget this. There's no way. And even for me right now, 5 months, looking back to, I know I had really, really just anguished, miserable feelings when she was like 5 or 6 weeks. And I just can't connect with that anymore because it's gone.
They wiped it clean. It's like Men in Black where they do like everyone.
And if it weren't like that, we wouldn't have as many babies as we do.
Never.
And so it's very beautiful and intelligent, this whole system.
Because they trick us over and over again to do it too. They like some force is wiping our brain.
It literally is. And it's like that reel I sent you, which we'll put in the show notes, of these two women being like early postpartum, like, this is awful, this is horrible. And then as time goes on, they're like, oh, that wasn't that bad. Okay. And then, you know, right around when your baby's like 18 months old, it's sort of like, oh, I want this again, let's do it again. And then that's when everybody gets pregnant again. And it's like, it's so real and it's so true. I am not getting pregnant again ever, but right. I am like, wow, okay. This now, I feel like time could pause and stop and she could be 5 or 6 months old forever and I would be totally perfectly happy with it. Where, you know, even just 1 month ago, like 12 months is a big milestone, I feel, and things did get easier, but then they kind of regressed and they got harder again for us for a little while. Yeah. And so now I'm really feeling like things overall are so much better. But even just yesterday, like, you know, we're still struggling though with this reflux and the laryngeal malacia, because even just yesterday she had a weight check-in thing, which I don't think that people need to be obsessively weighing their babies unless they're in a situation like I am where their baby is having a hard time gaining. And so she's falling off her growth curve again. She's for the last 2 weeks in a row, or no, sorry, 3 weeks, because we skipped one. Either way, she's just going down, down, down. And I'm like, what in the world? Like, it's so frustrating. I just wanted to scream. I fully expected that she was going to surpass her growth curve actually this time around, because I stopped eating eggs. Like, eggs was your problem too, which sucks. Eggs are so nutrient dense.
What's the deal with eggs? I know. And they're so cheap and easy. And it's just like,
oh my gosh. And our chickens right now are laying like 17, 18 a day. It's honestly torture.
Yeah.
It's torture to be like, well, I can't eat these. And I love eggs. I love them so much. And they do make me feel good. And and hopefully for you, they'll make you feel good again one day. And so but I've stopped eating them and her reflux has gotten so much better. And so I'm like, okay, obviously I'll do this for you. I haven't re-challenged yet the way that I want to. So I'm going to soon. And, you know, maybe I'll have a different, maybe when I re-challenge, nothing will happen. Maybe it's coincidence. And she, you know, finally kind of has been getting stronger because she's damn near trying to crawl, which is nuts. Wow,
that is nuts.
Yeah. She's up on all fours. She's moving her little back legs. Her arms have not moved yet though. And so she's falling on her face or whatever, but because of when babies reach that age and their whole front line of muscle and fascia and everything is becoming a lot stronger and their core is becoming stronger, often reflux symptoms do go away, or at least they lessen. So it's sort of like chicken or the egg.
Good one. What a fun Easter pun.
What a fun Easter pun for me. Okay. So maybe that is partially. So I am going to re-challenge. I'm going to eat a bunch of eggs and see what happens.
So crazy. I mean, that is the thing for people who don't know, when we say re-challenge, if you suspect a food intolerance, you pull that food out of your diet for a period of time and then you eat it again, like in a pretty high amount. And if your body's reacting or your baby's reacting, it will be very obvious.
Yeah, you'll know.
Yeah. Because the body like gets used to things. It's just like the analogy I use with my patients is if you're in a cold air-conditioned room and you don't really feel like it's that bad, but then you go out in like the Arizona heat and you're like, whoa, it's really hot. And then you go back into the air-conditioned room. The temperature of the room never changed, but your perception is now so different and it feels freezing to you, right? Our body does these things to keep homeostasis where we almost like ignore constant symptoms that are happening to us. And it's only by removing our exposure to that and then reintroducing it back do we feel the full effect of what's been happening. So for people who don't know what we're talking about when we say re-challenge, it sounds so funny, like we're going to challenge the egg.
That's a good point. Thanks for clarifying that. And yeah. It's some people will be like, I don't want to ever take out that food because then I'm going to react to it when I eat it again. And it's like, usually I think what's happening is that, yes, people are living with these low-lying symptoms that they just don't even know. They don't even realize anymore. It just becomes their new normal. It's like status quo. You take it out, you start to feel better. So then when you do introduce it again, it maybe it does cause kind of a more, a larger acute inflammatory reaction. So you are feeling a little bit more of the symptoms, but it's not like not eating it is making you now sensitive, because there's going to be fruits that are only grow in the jungles of Peru that you've never eaten. And then you go to Peru and you eat it for the very first time in your life at 34 years old, and you're not going to necessarily have a big reaction because you've never eaten it before. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like there are so many foods that we've never eaten that when we eat them, it's fine. It's not that, it's that you have actually been reacting to it all the time, but you just didn't know.
Yeah.
So anyways, it's like, that is still a really frustrating thing that's happening. And even just this morning, I was doing homeschool with my kids and I had fed her and I'm sitting there holding her and I'm like standing over my son trying to explain this like math concept. And she puked all over the table, down the leg of the table, on the ground, on his pants, not on his book, thankfully. But it was like, wait, what? It was like a huge amount again. And she hasn't done that for a long time. I've eaten zero eggs. So there's a component of laryngomalacia that babies are always going to have more reflux. They're always going to have a bit of a harder time staying on their growth curve. She has a borderline between moderate and severe. So I have to keep that in perspective that she is a severe case. I mean, basically, the only thing that's keeping her away from that diagnosis of true severe laryngomalacia is that she does not have the cyanotic events, meaning that she's not, she's not becoming blue or dusky because of lack of oxygen. Thank God.
Goodness. That would
be so stressful. Yes. But so her airway is never closing so much that she's not getting proper oxygenation. Very, very grateful for that. But so anyway, that has still continued to remain a challenge because I'm really, really tired of being covered in spit up all the time. Yeah. All of my things are covered in spit up. The floor is covered in spit up. I don't even pick it up anymore sometimes. Like I walked in my closet the other day and there was just this dried white, like, spot. And sometimes I don't even see it. I walked around the other day in this store and I had no idea that she had puked all down the front of that jacket you gave me, which I loved so much. And I like raced home and washed it, you know, right away because I didn't want it. Because sometimes those spit up marks, they like stain. There's so much fat in there. It's almost like an oil stain on your clothes.
Yeah.
And so that's another thing. I know this is really superficial, but it's just frustrating that I feel like I have a very high tolerance for BS.
Yeah.
Overall, and chaos.
Yeah, but, you do.
But
way higher than anyone I've ever met.
That's only because of Wes. Wes has really challenged me because he's so calm. He's almost pathologically calm that I'm like, wait, what? So I've had to really adjust to him. But I can only take so many days in a row though, where everything, it just feels so hard. And then I need a win. Like I need a win day. I need something to chill out, to just feel easy, to just feel even just the lack of frustration. And so I think that there's been this sort of like sliding ombre bar of transition between 3 and 5 months now, where we're having more moments and more days that are feeling easier and less of them that are feeling so consistently hard.
That's good.
And yeah, thank God. It has really elevated my mood and just my whole perception and experience of this situation, because man, it's really hard to be frustrated and irritated all day long.
Yeah.
And so I would say that we're doing like way better. It's not that it's gone. It's not that everything is hunky-dory. Oh, and her sleep had regressed really badly, which is typical of the 4-month sleep regression. But I think that it was a different thing for her. She was born a week late. And so maybe there's something where she's kind of ahead, but she feels like an older baby. She feels like Avia felt to you.
Yeah.
Like Avia never really felt the age that she ever was. She always felt older. And Sunday feels the same to me. And I'm like, is it because you're trying to keep up with your older siblings? Is it because you were born a week late? I don't know. But she seems about a month ahead of her actual age. And so there was this weird regression that happened that I don't think was associated with her 4-month sleep regression. And that got hard again. But I do see with her, she reminds me of my son in that inherently, I think she is a baby that orients well to sleep, because some of them are not like that. And I've had that experience. I think I probably wouldn't have believed people had I not had my own experience. I would be like, no, it's just because you're not doing something right with them. That's what my initial judgment would have been. Oh, no, because you're just not trying hard enough or whatever.
You're not good enough.
Which is so mean. Like, why would my mind go there? I don't know. But
yeah, of course.
But it did. But now that I've had the experience, because Sloan was not a baby that slept. She just, that was like, no matter what we did. And, you know, I did all of the things and all the body work and all the nervous system mm-hmm. regulation and the blah, 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 da, 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 tongue lip tight release and blah, blah, blah. Anyway, Sunday is really different in that. And so thankfully she is a baby. I feel like that orients well to sleep. And so she is making huge strides in sleep just naturally without any pushes from me. But I do feel a really strong, and this is going to probably turn off a lot of people, but I really strongly do want to sleep train her. And yeah. I'm surprised at my want for this, because I think more than anything, what I'm sensing in her is that she has the skill base. She really can do 100%. It. She, you know, like she really, and I actually think that, I know this is going to sound so weird, but when you feel it, you feel it. I feel like she wants it. I feel like
100%.
Okay. What is that? I've never.
Well, Avia was like that. Sleep training was the best thing that ever happened for either of us. Because if I had kept her in the bed, she wouldn't have slept and I wouldn't have slept and no one would have been happy. She like really thrives sleeping on her own.
Yeah.
But she's like Gage. She has a stronger constitution. She orients to sleep as well. And it's like every child's just different. We just can't judge anybody or anything. And I will never back down from the fact that sleep training was perfect for our family.
Yeah. Well, and when it works really well like that, there wasn't a lot of crying for you, right? Like
no.
It wasn't even that hard. No. She it's wanted great. It. Yeah. And see, that's how I'm starting to feel with Sunday. I like my mom heart and yours as well. I can't stand the crying situation. Mm-hmm. It's not something that I can do. And I know that there's a lot of people that are like, well, they have to get through it. And I understand that, but it's like that to me, it wigs me out more than it's worth, like, mm-hmm. you know, so, but with her, even last night, for the first night ever, I put her down at night awake, completely awake in her crib. Mm-hmm. And I was like, just watching on the monitor, like what's going to happen right now. Because at that last year, you know, like right before you put them to bed for the night, their sleep pressure is so, so, so strong because they're very fatigued. At least she is.
Yeah.
Maybe aren't, but she is. So I was like, you know, of all of the times for her to be able to fall asleep on her own, this would be the time of the day. I will say she has never napped in her crib, not beyond like maybe 6 weeks. So our napping situation, we need to really figure out, but at night, her night sleep is rock star, I think, like mm-hmm. waking up one or two times a night on average. And so I really am feeling this intuitive pull. That's like, let her do it. Let her do it. Let her figure it out. Like show her that she can do it.
Yeah.
Of course I will be there to respond if she's not having it, if she really needs me, then of course. And the thing though, that I'm struggling with this and is that I cannot go all night long without nursing. I will get mastitis.
Yeah.
So I'm like, am I going to just do the dream feed thing? I think I will. I think I haven't figured out how I'm going to approach this yet. And I'll tell you when we do it and I'll pull you guys along with us and show you all of it. Cause I know there's a lot of you in my position as well, right, with babies in the similar age, or in the future, you're going to have a baby in the similar age. And it's like, how does this work? I don't know. Am I going to dream feed her? The idea of pumping in the middle of the night sounds like absolute torture to me, but I know that I could do it if I needed to. I don't know why. I just hate pumping so much. So I think I'll do some kind of a dream feed, which means that I would just go in at a certain time that I deem sort of like when we're going to do it and you're consistent. And I would go and I would pick her up and she'd be asleep and I would nurse her while she's sort of asleep. But feeding is reflexive at night for babies. So they don't often even need to rouse that much in order to do it. Mm-hmm. So that would be my plan. And in terms of everything else, I feel like another component for me, because I have this large family now, is that it's been really hard with postpartum with my other kids.
Yeah.
And not even just with her. And so that has been, it's always hard. It's always been the tricky aspect of adding more kids to your family. And that is starting to feel a lot easier for me as well. Although, I mean, like, even as I'm saying this, yesterday was a really bad day. Like yesterday was so frustrating to me. And I like yelled at my 3-year-old. She was being so adversarial. She's getting into this phase. It's very 3-year-old-y. I mean, mm-hmm. I should just chill out about it, but it's in the moment, especially when you know that they are capable of other things and then they just don't, it's really infuriating. It's really frustrating. And when you're one person but with 4
yeah.
people who need you and who are all talking to you at the same time, all demanding things from you at the same time, like about to break something, about to spill something, like throwing things away, opening things, not getting in the car seat, blah, blah, whatever it is. It's like, oh my God. Like I just, you know, you mm-hmm. want to just explode. And I live really far away from downtown Boise, and I was driving home, and at certain times, three of the four of them were like just scream crying. And I was like, I'm going to actually die in this car right now. So I am not immune. I have those moments too. And I try to share them and be real with you guys because it's wild. It is so wild sometimes. Like when those moments happen and everything is overstimulated, I wouldn't even call myself a sensory a sensitive person in that way. Thank God. But I am. I get my moments. You get tapped out. You know, you have this capacity. Nobody can just go and go and go forever with that. And so anyway, I think I'm also like, my hormones are kind of off and weird. I think I just ovulated, but I didn't have strong signs of ovulation. I really need to figure out what I'm doing.
So you might have had a surge in testosterone, which will definitely make you more irritable.
Yeah. Okay. Well,
ovulation.
Yeah. And my ovulation now is backed up. I'm on day like 22. my cycles, the last two cycles have been like 50 days. Is, you know, I'm breastfeeding in the middle of the night a gajillion times. So it's like, whatever. But yeah, I think I maybe I'm close to it, or I just had it or something, because I've been feeling really weird and off. All to say though, that everything is adjusting, and I do feel a big difference between now and how I did like 2 months ago. And so it's trending in the right direction. And I know a lot of you guys love postpartum, love little newborns and love babies. And that's like you, right? Like you love that time period. And I think that's so awesome. And it's how kind of you say that it's like fascinating to watch people just have sex and get pregnant. For me, it's fascinating to watch somebody just like nurse a baby and it works. And you're not in pain and you're not like distraught and in mental anguish, because that's how it is for me. So anyway, but I do feel like the bulk of that, like 80 to 85% of it, feels beyond me now. And now I know the slow trickle of that remaining immediate postpartum feeling will just kind of like keep going away as the months go on. And I'm so looking forward to summer and just hanging out with my kids outside in the warm and the sun. I'm very much a sepia constitution homeopathically. Mm-hmm. So that is the one that when I get off balance, that's how I revert. And so if you don't know what I'm talking about, really quickly, I'll say that we got to go. But a sepia constitution for a mom would be like, you, when you're out of balance and you reach your breaking point, you're like apathetic to all your family members, as you had mentioned before, like apathetic towards your husband, apathetic towards your kids. Like you want to run away. You want to get away from them. You don't want to be with them. You just want to like be alone in the sun, and that you feel a lot better when you're in the sun. You feel a lot better after exercising. I don't have a strong desire to exercise, but when I go on a walk, like that is the thing now that I need to do to clear my head. Like when I came home yesterday in this very bad mood, my husband was like, so do you want to go on a walk now or after dinner? Thank you for knowing me so well, because I needed to walk. And you know, what was actually really cool is there was a hailstorm on me when I was walking.
Oh.
And it was actually like exactly the intensity that I needed.
Like I loved being hit with ice. That's so funny.
It was like this I was like matched by the atmosphere with this intense hailstorm for only like, you know, 4 minutes. Like hail is so quick, but it was just pelting my whole body, and you know, probably like bean size. It wasn't teeny, but they weren't huge either, but it stung my skin, and just kind of like walking the whole ground, everything was covered in white by the time it was done. But it was so sort of like nice and healing. And once it was done, literally the clouds like parted and the sun came out, and I was like, oh, okay, I'm going to be all right. I'm going to be okay. So anyway, that's my update. That's what I want to share. Thank you for sharing all about the way that you're feeling right now. And I'm so sorry that you feel so sick. And one day you will not be able to remember this, but right now it's like so intense. And I just like wish I could give you a hug. And I do, and I will, because we're neighbors now.
You know, I was going to say, I can't believe it hailed at your house. It didn't hail at mine. We live 15 minutes away.
Wait, what? It didn't?
Yeah. No, not at all. We just had like sun and like a little bit of sprinkles, but that's how hailstorms happen in Colorado too. It's like one isolated area will have hail and a tornado, and the other area is like sunny and happy.
That's kind of fun. Spring weather is sort of fun that way, because it's so up and down. But anyway, okay. Well, thank you guys all for listening, and you know, we'll just keep dragging you along on our journey.
And I just want to end on, because I know when I was going through infertility, if anyone's listening to this, I don't know if anyone who's trying to get pregnant listens to our life updates or the stuff about pregnancy and postpartum, unless that's triggering. But I just want to remind people that although a lot of times women and mothers, me included, can complain about motherhood, there's also so much greatness, and there's just a tendency as humans to talk about the hard stuff and not the good stuff. And I had a lot of struggle becoming pregnant, only hearing all of these like hard things about motherhood and how it was so challenging, because people just don't go online and like are like, this is the best thing ever. It's so great. I love every single moment of this, because people feel bad about doing that. But then people don't see all of the good stuff and why this is all worth it. So I just want to remind people that although it sounds hard, that there's like only hard times, there's so many more amazing, beautiful things about becoming a mother. And so,
it's so true. And, but like you were saying that, and I'm thinking about how social media has that like really classic facade that everything's just a highlight reel. And so you're only ever seeing the good things. It's funny. It's like on social media to people that you don't know, you only want to show the good thing. But then with your friends and family, it's like, you only want to talk about the negative. Yeah. It's like, well, what's happening here? Like, is it good or is it bad? But yeah, I want to echo what you're saying. Motherhood is the best thing that's ever happened to me. I'm obsessed. It's going to be like, it's tragic to me to think, and I don't think about it very much, but that I'm out of that like baby making phase, that this is just this is my family now. And I'm so grateful for them, but it is like addicting. It is like the best, coolest, most amazing thing. So yes, while we talk about these real moments of the struggle, there's so many more, you know, orders of magnitude more joyous moments about it. And if you're not there yet, you'll see one day. And we're so excited for you.
Awesome. Cool. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Healthy as a Mother podcast. In order for others to hear this information, please leave a review with Apple Podcasts, subscribe, and send to a friend who could benefit from this content. We're so excited to share more on becoming and being a mother next time.
And please remember that the ideas and views of this podcast are for informational purposes only and are not intended to serve as a substitute for medical care of any kind, including the diagnosis or treatment of any illness or disease. Consult with your provider before integrating this information into your own care plan. And remember, a healthier future starts now, and it starts with you.